Speaking in this week and next week, I am going to do two more sermons on community. If you were here about a month ago, I did a sermon on community and had lots of good feedback on it, and people had a lot more questions and wanted a little bit more on that. And so we're going to spend this week and next week doing that, and then in a couple weeks from now, we will get back into the book of Romans, and in the fall, we'll be going through the book of Romans. So this morning, we're going to continue our study on community. And as we do that, let me begin with this question. What is the fundamental human need? Of all the needs that humanity has, what is the most foundational and fundamental longing that people crave and desire above everything else? Mother Teresa, I believe, was right when she stated that this, that life without other people is the worst disease any human being can ever experience. Mother Teresa, if you didn't catch that, says loneliness is the worst disease anyone can ever experience. And so are you lonely? Seriously, do you feel like you live a lonely life? If you're like most Americans, you are lonely. America is lonely. In a day where communication is more accessible than ever before, and the ability to travel across the country and around the world cheaper and more inexpensive than ever before, with all of these things that have been afforded to us, as Americans, we continually find ourselves to be more and more lonely. Loneliness is on the rise. Loneliness has become an epidemic in our culture. One of the major insurance companies in America at this time conducted a study, and we'll see why they conducted the study in a few minutes. But the outcome of their study is that over 50% of Americans feel alone or left out of peer groups and friends that they are acquainted with. Over 50%. And something else I found really fascinating to me is that the younger generation, the millennial generation, has been reported to be far more lonely than the baby boomer generation, the elderly generation. Isn't that weird? Who would you think to be more lonely, older people or younger people? And yet, research over and over again says the millennials are far more lonely than the elderly. Why? Because Western community, as we saw a couple weeks ago when I did my first sermon, is in sharp decline. Radical individualism, as we talked about a few weeks ago, has become the functional status, even for most Christians. This radical individualism has engendered unprecedented social isolation and has produced a depth of loneliness that American 21st century culture has never experienced until now. And when Mother Teresa said that loneliness is the worst disease that any human can ever experience, she may have been onto something without even knowing it. The former Surgeon General of the United States, his name is Dr. Vivek Murthy, has just recently released some studies that he has been working through, and I have this on the screen for you, but read this. This is so powerful. When you look at the data, what's really interesting is loneliness has been found to be associated with a reduction of lifespan. The reduction in lifespan for loneliness is similar to that caused by smoking 15 cigarettes a day, and it's greater than the impact of lifespan on obesity. So if you think about how much we put into curbing tobacco and the use of obesity compared to how much effort and resources we put into addressing loneliness, there's no comparison. He goes on to say, if you look even deeper, which we don't really want to do that as Americans, but if you do, you'll find loneliness associated with a greater risk of heart disease, depression, anxiety, and dementia. And if you look at the workplace, you'll also find associated with reductions in task performance. It limits creativity, it impairs other aspects of exclusive function, such as decision making. What is Vivek Murthy actually saying? That loneliness is killing you. Loneliness is physically destroying your body. You are, he says, just as well off not being lonely and smoking 15 cigarettes a day. Isn't that crazy? Which all of this, we need to come to see that the psychological, the inner workings of who we are have direct outworkings on our physical conditions. Okay, and I would be the first to tell you until 2 years ago, this is a bunch of, you know, hocus pocus, magic, ridiculous, like just get out of bed and go do stuff, right? Like figure it out. And yet the inner working of our heart and our souls and the depression and the loneliness and the discouragement that we face, it is taking a toll on us. It's actually killing us. But what is loneliness? How do we measure loneliness? What does loneliness actually look like in our lives? And I think there's at least a couple different levels that we should address. And the very first level is just like the level of the hermit, right? The person who like runs away out into the mountains. And these people have the actual physical absence of people in their life. In Hampton Roads, it's hard to be a true hermit. Does that make sense? Like there's more people here than you can find. I was just doing a little research project for New England. I'm headed up to New England to do some SOMA training and stuff up there. And I was looking, the top 10 cities in New England, guess what the biggest one is? Boston. The second one only has 150,000 people in. That's the second largest city in New England. You know how many people just because? 300,000. We're twice the size of the largest city in New England. Okay? There's people everywhere. So you got to really try to be a hermit. But there are people who do try to live that life of not being involved in other people's life. But I don't think that's most of us. I think most of us are on the second level. There are fewer people in the second level than in the first level of being a hermit. And the second level of loneliness occurs when one's life is surrounded with people. They are around you at work. They are with you in your MC. They are with you in your neighborhood. They are with you at your places of hobbies. But although there are people all scattered throughout your life, every day, everywhere you go, there's people, you're lonely. This means that you can have a lot of friends and still be lonely. Or maybe what we should say is that you can have a lot of acquaintances but no real friends. And this all means this, is that we are all lonely people together. Isn't that ridiculous? We are lonely together. And so this leads to an interesting irony. Although loneliness abounds in our culture, how many of you would really admit that you're really lonely? Would you admit that? If you are, I mean, if you're not, great. But I think most of us have this guise, this rouge that we're not lonely. We don't think of ourselves as lonely. However, when the tough questions are asked about our lives and the deep longings of our hearts are actually exposed, I think we'll come to see that every one of us in this room are at, to some level, to some degree, lonely people. Loneliness exists to some degree in all of our lives. Sure, as Americans, we do a billion things to cover it up. This is why you're so busy. This is why you can't take a night off. This is why you can't just sit at your house. Because if you're just sitting at your house, sitting in a chair, what are you thinking? I have no one who wants to be here with me. I'm lonely. So sure, we do a billion things to cover it up, but deep down, the loneliness is still plaguing us, and it's plaguing us to the point that it is literally killing us. There's a famous UCLA standard metric that they use, a loneliness scale, that the psychologists and people in this world actually use. And some of the questions that they use to diagnose the loneliness of people are questions like this. How much do you have in common with the people around you? Do you feel like you're left out from social circles that you want to be a part of? How many people really know you well? How many people really understand what makes you tick and what motivates you? See, I bet a number of us could name 100 acquaintances, and yet, if we're married, does even our spouse consist of that one person who knows everything about you? When these tough questions are actually addressed and honestly analyzed, we begin to see the depths of our loneliness. So much so that there is so much research out there that says the loneliest decades of our lives are not the millennials and it's not the baby boomers, it's people like me, the Generation X people. During the 20s, 30s, and 40s, these are the loneliest decades of our lives. Why? Because we're busy with jobs, we're busy with soccer, we're busy with our families, we're busy doing all sorts of things with our houses and projects, and through it all, we live very busy and yet disconnected lives. Our relationships during these years become very superficial. And all the while, we claim to be busy and overwhelmed, but at the bottom, our hearts are shriveling up and dying because we're primarily people who experience loneliness. So maintain, if you will, your aura of busyness to cover up the death that is lingering deep down in your souls. Or you can begin to acknowledge that maybe, maybe, you experience loneliness. And here's why this is important. And have this on the screen. This is kind of might be a little bit outlandish statement at first, and let me unpack it for you. Anytime we look for meaning and purpose outside of the context of relationships, gospel relationships, we actually contradict the divine design of the triune communal God. What does that mean? Anytime you look for meaning, for satisfaction, for purpose, outside the context of relationships, and specifically gospel relationships, you are actually going against the very design that God has for humanity. Ever since the Western society has idolized the self and has idealized the self. In other words, we have placed the individual at the expense of the community. And at the individual level, because of Western society, we are looking for meaning and significance in our individual realities. Because of that, we are constantly people who look for purpose and meaning in your jobs, in your bank account, in who you are, your hobbies. And what you'll begin to see is that meaning and significance in the Western society has led us to find meaning in everything but relationships. Relationships are an add-on, as we saw a couple weeks ago, that the church in America primarily thinks of the church as an add-on to their already existing life. So that what do? You have like this, if you look at it like a wheel or like a wheel with all these different spokes, you have a spoke that comes out from the center of your life that is like your job, and you have a spoke that comes out as a wheel of your life as your family, and you have a wheel that comes out here as your hobbies, and one of the spokes that comes out of your already existing life is what? Church. It's just an add-on. Meaning in our Western society has not been sought after in relationship, but in things and possessions. I think you can see that. And I want you to know, here's what's fascinating, is that this continual pursuit for deep meaning outside of gospel relationships is breeding loneliness, and it's killing you. All of this has led us to see that loneliness as an epidemic is destroying our souls. And so the deep irony of the Western society is that for meaning and satisfaction, you try to find it in things at the expense of the community, and you never get it. In fact, all it's doing to you is destroying you. We become disenchanted individuals looking for the magical solution to life in all the wrong places. And when we seek help to deal with all of the depression and loneliness that is the outcome of not being able to find meaning in your job and not finding meaning in your vocation and all these different things, we go to a counselor, right? We go to a psychologist. And what is the psychologist primarily, what are their answers primarily? Things like this, and you can read these and look them up if you want. But the answer we've been told is we need to love ourselves more. We need to forgive ourselves more. We need to build up our self-esteem. Anyone heard these things before? I don't think I'm out on a limb here. I've done some research. But here's the basic understanding. You're struggling. Your life is a mess. You're depressed. You're lonely. All right, we got to love ourselves more. We got to do these things that are actually going to improve our self-esteem. Basically, you could save a lot of money and just go watch a Disney movie. Because every Disney movie, and I love Disney, every Disney movie is telling you all these things. And as well and good as these things may be, what have we learned about all the self-esteem decades that my generation has grown up with? What have we learned about you need to love yourself more and forgive yourself more? If you remember from a couple weeks ago, what we've learned is that depression and suicide is on the rise. Anyone hear of any suicides the last couple weeks? I've heard of three. From local people to very famous rappers. What we've learned, if you look at it, is that if you continue to deal with your loneliness and your depression, and you look for answers in and in yourself, it only destroys you. Why? Because on the screen, we need to believe this, that belonging, not personal freedom, not self-esteem, not meaningful work, not marriage in and of itself, not having kids in and of itself, is the most fundamental human need beyond food and shelter. Do you believe that? Can you see that your deepest, deepest longing in your heart is to have a sense of belonging? And all of this reveals the foundational, fundamental story of the world. The fact that the triune God dwells in perfect community with himself means that as image bearers, we were made to live in community, in a place of belonging. We have been hardwired innately for a sense of deep, meaningful relationships with others. And some might say this, that our deepest need is to be in a right relationship with God. How many say that's our deepest need? I want to say absolutely, but we need to think through that a little bit more, I think. And that's absolutely true. Don't hear me saying that our deepest need is not to be in a right relationship with God. But what is God's intended outcome as image bearers to be in a right relationship with him? What's his intended outcome for that? That we have a bunch of million Christians bowing down individually worshiping him on Sunday? What is the outcome of having a restored right relationship with God? I'd say this. The designed end that God has in a right relationship with him because of our sin is not simply to have this individual, personal relationship with him. And there may be many outcomes of what I'm talking about, but I would say this, the primary outcome of why God wants you in a right relationship with him is so that you can have a right relationship with others. This is what the two great commandments are teaching us, are they not? What are they? What's the first great commandment? Love God, and what's the second? Love your neighbor. If you've been in redemption, you know those are not two different commands, are they? They're actually a singular command that the way that you love God is how? You love your neighbor. You can't go to bed tonight and saying, I loved my neighbor, but I didn't love God. And you can't go to bed tonight saying, I love God and hated your neighbor. Because what we've discovered is that when we actually fellowship with God, we love God, we then fellowship with who? Each other. We experience God together, and as 1 John tells us, if we love one another, if we are in community with one another, God is with us, and his love is perfected in us. I'm trying to help us to see that the intended outcome of being restored rightly to God is so that we can be restored rightly to each other. And it is in and only through that restoration with God and each other at the same time that meaningful, deep relationships can be formed and loneliness can be fought against. And yet, the very thing we were made for, the very thing that we don't possess, is the very thing we don't possess. Why? Because relationships are hard. Anyone struggle getting along with people? How about the person you love the most? Is it struggle? In relationships, the idolatry of your heart always gets exposed. So The very thing we were created for and the thing for which we so desperately long for is being robbed from us because of our own choices, because of our own wrong worship. In other words, the sin in our hearts is what's keeping us from experiencing the joy and the meaning we were created for, which is why we need the gospel. Which means the gospel is also a social gospel. Let me unpack that. It is social in the sense that it has come to heal the idolatrous separation that exists in humanity. It is social in that the only remedy to our loneliness is to be restored to God, so we restored to each other. When you look at the new creation realities, when Jesus comes back and he actually creates the new world that we all live on, you will experience relationship and meaning like you have never experienced it before. Why? What God made you for. So I don't know why relationships are hard for you, but I'll tell you why they're hard for me. I think many others might relate to why relationships are really hard. And I think the primary reason that relationships are hard because it deals and exposes our insecurity. To exist in real relationships requires being vulnerable. Being vulnerable to allow other people to know who you really are. And you know why you don't want to be vulnerable to other people? Because number one, you don't want others to look down on you for your brokenness. You have created this aura. You've created this picture of who you are, and if you were to be completely vulnerable about your brokenness, your loneliness, what your life looks like, and you share that with other people, what are you afraid of? They're going to look down on you. Or you can't really believe that's true about yourself, and so you keep hiding it. And the second outcome, second reason we're afraid to be vulnerable, is probably because of real-life situations where people have used that information against you. You ever had that done to you? Where you've shared information and confidence and people have destroyed you with that? See, for many, our inability to be vulnerable and real is what is destroying the opportunity to have meaningful, deep relationships. Meaningful, deep relationships where joy is actually found. As the great theologian N.F. says, a couple of you out there, if you want to join me on October 17th, you can come to Richmond with me. I'll have my N.F. hoodie on. Don't worry, it'll be sweet. In his latest song, he's being very, I think, very open. And he says this, "I push away the people that I love the most. Why? I don't want anyone to know I'm vulnerable. Why? That makes me feel weak and so uncomfortable. Why? So stop asking me questions. I just want to feel alive." What is NF saying? He just wants to feel alive, but he doesn't want to go through all the problems of being vulnerable. And he's recognizing that about himself. And what is really going on with NF and what's really going on with us with the lack of vulnerability and the deep insecurities that we all deal with that is actually robbing us from life that is truly life, what's going on is underneath there's a belief system that is not centered and believing in the good news of Jesus. And yes, you may be a Christian and you believe the gospel, but what is robbing you from deep, meaningful relationships and finding meaning in a group of people is your lack of belief in the good news. The belief system you're believing that is anti-gospel says this, "I'm fundamentally able to deal with myself, heal myself, and take care of myself." And in the Western culture, it's telling you I can find meaning and satisfaction in every other place but in meaningful relationships. You're putting your trust, your faith in something other than Jesus. And the irony in this false pseudo-belief system is that you think you're maintaining a sense of safety and security, right? Like, why aren't you vulnerable? Because you don't share everything with everyone? Because you think you're actually holding on to something that is safe. And the irony is that safety net is really a net of insecurity keeping you from what you were made for, deep, meaningful relationships. The more vulnerable you become, the more life-giving your relationships actually are. And until you believe that your safety net is not found in your ability to build your own security, your own wall, but only in the approval that Jesus provides for you, then escaping loneliness will never happen for you. It will always be an elusive reality that you trick yourself into believing that you have, but you don't have it. And all the while, deep down in your heart, you know you don't have it. You're lonely. You have no meaningful relationships, and therefore you have no meaningful life. So the Bible helps us remedy this. What does community look like? How do we fight loneliness? How do we find a sense of belonging in a group of people in gospel relationships? Well, if you haven't figured this out, the entire Bible is telling us about a mission that a triune God is going on, and as image bearers who reflect Him, He has made us as a group of people who He has sent on a mission. It is in that group of people where we find meaning, where we find satisfaction, where we find joy. And I want you to know, if you look for your meaning outside of those relationships, you're going to live an empty life. The Bible says that the experience of this deep foundational need for belonging through which one experiences the life of God is to be found in participation with God's people. And this is why we call this a spiritual discipline. It is an intentional practice that we are going to commit our lives to. We're going to commit our lives to one another for our joy and for the joy of our city. This week we're going to talk about for our joy, and next week we'll talk about the joy of our city. But how does the scripture say we actually create this web of meaningful relationships? Let me give you three ways, and we'll be done this morning. Number one, Acts chapter 2 and verse 42. There's a lot going on in Acts chapter 2, verse 42, but let me just read it for you and break it apart for you. I think this is how the Greek structure actually works. The early church, they devoted themselves to two things. What two things did they devote themselves to? The apostles' teaching. Okay, so we're not... The apostles' teaching, it's interesting here, is not just like the Old Testament. It's actually the Old Testament in light of Jesus. What did Jesus come to do in light of the Old Testament? And so we're talking about the doctrine piece, the Bible studies that are centered around who Jesus is and what He came to do. But number two, they committed themselves to what? Fellowship. And what did that fellowship look like? It consisted of breaking bread and praying. Okay, and I'm not going to get into debate, but I think breaking bread there is just sharing meals together. And then around those meals, actually praying with one another. So here's what we're after in this verse. In Acts chapter 2, verse 42, we're just going to take this little phrase, they devoted themselves to fellowship. I learned something new about this verse. I've studied it a ton in my life. Here's what I learned. I actually began to do a little bit more deep study on this word devote. And this word devote in Acts chapter 2 is a very unique Greek word that means this, to associate closely and continuously with. All right, let me repeat that. To associate closely and continuously with. So we could actually say this, that the early church continuously associated with God's people. Like, this was not a once-a-week activity. This wasn't like, you know, if I can get to that, I'll do that. This isn't like an add-on. They're saying, no, we devoted ourselves, that the primary thing we're doing is committing our life to one another. We're going to continually associate with one another. What is it in your life that you associate most closely with? What is it? Because whatever it is that you most closely associate yourself with is what defines you. It becomes your identity. And if your close association is not found with God's people in the gospel, you need to hear me. I think you need to hear me. If it's not there, you are on the proverbial slippery slope towards loneliness, depression, suicide, and death. So earn your millions, get your awards, get your degrees, become famous. And it's only going to destroy you slowly and slowly. Because healthy community, requires a commitment to each other in which there are regular, frequent interactions that our society is causing to become increasingly rare. I've been reading several articles on what they call the lack of relationship in the middle. There are probably a couple people that you associate very closely with here, and then you probably have lots of acquaintances, but you don't have anyone in the middle. You know where you find the people in the middle? At the grocery store that you run into all the time. As you are in the neighborhood and you're going here and you're going there and you're right there. You know why we don't have any relationships right there? Because when you're in the grocery store waiting in line, what are you doing? Anyone not on their phone? You can be honest. Or you're like cursing. Would you hurry up? Like figure out how to get the card in there. Oh gosh, you're writing a check. Where's the next line, right? Good. You not just me. Healthy community requires regular, frequent interactions that our community, our society, is causing to become increasingly rare. To be devoted in these regular, continuous associations with each other means you stick it out regardless what happens. We say that community is messy, and it's absolutely true, but how many of your marriages are messy and yet you stick it out? Why? I hope it's because deep down you know that Jesus stuck it out for you. He didn't quit on you. How many times have you rebelled and failed him today, and has he ran away from you? No, and yet one time someone sins against us in RMC, we're what? Bye-bye. We stick it out because Jesus stuck it out to give us a relationship with the one true God, to experience life that is truly life with him through other people. When brothers and sisters disrespect you, you're called to stick it out. When brothers and sisters actually backbite and gossip against you, you're called to stick it out. When brothers and sisters actually lie about you, you're called to stick it out. When brothers and sisters make fun of your kids because they're ugly, you're called to stick it out. Devotion means regular, continuous association despite what is actually going to happen, because if you're actually in real relationship, those things are going to happen, aren't they? That's why you have a real relationship with your spouse, hopefully. The other option is to not stick it out. And when this option is actually taken and it's employed, loneliness is looming on the horizon. You think that you're going to go somewhere else to find meaning and relationship, but I want you to know when you fail to stick it out, you're actually going against what you're looking for. The result of hitting the eject button is not a real relationship that results in connected belonging, but the outcome is disconnected, superficial belonging. True connectedness, true belonging occurs when others know who we really are and love us despite our brokenness. If you are going to tell me who is your closest, deepest relationship, it's probably, hopefully, with your spouse. Why? Because they might know your faults. They might know your weaknesses. They see your brokenness. And yet, through all of the brokenness, they say what? I love you. I'm here for you. And yet, very few of us want others to know our brokenness. So if you have people in your life who love you despite your brokenness, who live with you despite your inherent sins, then you're on the path to fighting loneliness and experiencing deep, meaningful relationships, because we have been called to intentionally and continuously associate with our brothers and sisters to find deep, meaningful relationships. You want to fight loneliness? You actually have to stick it out and be devoted to God's people. Number two, we see in Romans chapter 12, verse 9 and 10, this. Paul says, love must be sincere and be devoted to one another in love and honor one another above yourselves. What's Paul saying? Paul's saying this, that the devotion of sticking it out necessarily involves love. Love, hear me, is not a ditch, something you fall into. Love is not a Hallmark card, something superficial with no depth. What is love? Love is commitment. Love is committing to seek the interests of others above your own. In our own day, there's this superficial, selfish love that when people say they love you, what they possibly might mean is simply this, is they don't really love you, they love what you provide and give to them. They love the attention, they love the affections, they love the pleasure, they love the food, they love the clean house that they give you. But you don't love them. You don't really love them, you love what they provide for you. You're not committed to them. Why? Because as soon as they stop providing all those things, what happens? You fall out of love. And yet biblical love that Paul calls us to be devoted to is the exact opposite. Biblical love is an allegiance to pursue what is best for the other person at all times at our own expense. Biblical love is committing yourself and your energies and your finances and your time to pursue others' good. In this verse, Paul uses two verbs to depict the church as family. I find it fascinating. He says, be devoted to one another in Philadelphia, in brotherly love. And actually, the word devoted there has this idea of brotherly affection. He says, be brotherly affectionate to one another in brotherly love, because he's describing the church here as a family, as brothers and sisters who in your own family you will go, even if you don't like your brother and sister yet, at one point in your life you will die for them. You will pursue their interests above your own. And so we talk a lot about the church here as a family at Redemption. It's one of our primary characteristics that the church is a family. And yet we need to come to understand something, that the family identity, the family characteristic of who we are is the ideal. And yet, guess what? The reality probably never matches up to that ideal, does it? And so we can talk about being family, and yet does the reality match it? Because we're sinners, it'll never perfectly match it. And I'm sure to some degree we've all experienced the church being family. And I'm sure to some degree we've all experienced the church here at Redemption not being family, where you've been let down by brothers and sisters, even by people here at Redemption. And as we said earlier, the option could be just to run away. And more often than not, that is the answer that people take. But when you run away, you lead yourself into more disconnectedness and isolation and loneliness. And I think there's another side of the coin that we should actually look at, too. It's not just that people have let us down. But I think there's the other side of the coin that we need to come and ask this. Shouldn't we consider how many times we failed to be true family to other people in our MC or in our church here? We are all too acutely aware of how others have let us down, but only slightly aware of how we have failed to be family to others. So Paul says the answer to this problem, this conundrum, this double standard of always feeling let down by the family and never seeing how we let others be let down by the family, the answer to that is not just to find some happy middle. We're not just trying to love people a little bit more than us being let down, per se. Paul is actually saying, no, here is the remedy. The remedy is look to Jesus, who in all of your brokenness, in all of your sin, in all of your rebellion, look at him hanging on the cursed, bloody tree for you. And when you see Jesus hanging on that tree, bloodied and beaten and murdered for you, you'll then begin to experience what love is. And when you begin to experience that love that Jesus has for you, that he was devoted to the very end of his life, that will be the type of love that you reciprocate to others. See, the degree to which you actually see Jesus' faithful devotion and love to you despite your infinite acts of rebellion will be to the degree to which you are devoted to one another in love. So as we continually associate with each other, and regularly meet with each other and be open and vulnerable about who we are so we can have real relationships, this is what love is. To pursue deep, meaningful relationship requires love, commitment to seek others' interests above your own, or as Paul says right there in Romans 12, to honor others above your own self. And then finally, number three, in Hebrews chapter 10, if you're preaching on community, this is like a requirement, right? Make everyone come Sunday morning. That's a joke. We'll break it. We'll talk about it. Hebrews 10 says this: let us consider how to stir one another up to love and good works, and not neglecting to meet together, as some are in the habit of doing, but encouraging one another, and all the more as you see the day approaching. See, the writer of Hebrews here is very concerned for his readers that they were going to very soon abandon Jesus and his gospel. Like, you look through that book and you read through that letter, and it's actually interesting. It's like if you read it out loud, it's about 45 minutes. It's like a sermon. And if we heard that sermon today, we'd be like, whoa, dude, that's a little too deep. But as you read through that entire sermon, you begin to see something over and over and over again. That the remedy to fight against the abandonment of Jesus is the devotion to be with God's people. He tells the church to consider one another. That word consider there is a very strong word about think. Think about your brothers and sisters. See what state they're in. See what they need. See what's going on in their life. Consider their life. Like, when you go meet with God's people, are you there to be devoted to them in love, where you're actually then considering what's going on in their life and how you can actually love them? Or are we the opposite of Americans who are doing the opposite, and we're coming to this community saying, what can you give me? What can you provide me? The writer of Hebrews says, if you want deep, meaningful relationships that helps you persevere in your faith and have meaningful life, you're going to go to these groups of meetings devoted to one another in love and consider what other people are doing. Understanding where they're at. Understanding where their commitment to Jesus is at. If they're a brand new Christian, we're not treating them like they should be a 50-year-old saint. And we love them where they're at, and we help them where they're at. Which means this: if you're not with God's people, you can't really know the needs of God's people, and you can't consider other people, and your life for meaningful relationships is squelched. Like, please hear this. Hear this. We are not saying at Redemption Church, you just need community because it's a cool thing. We're saying it because it's at the very fabric of humanity, and that without it, your life is a mess. And the only way to experience meaningful life is with God's people in a restored relationship with Him. So this is why He tells us plainly, don't stop meeting together. And there's a debate. I don't care which side you take. Some people say this is the Sunday morning. And I'm like, no, this is an all of life thing. You know what I love about the writer of Hebrews? He doesn't tell you how often, does he? Because we're all like, what does that mean? Give me a time. Give me a number. How many times a month do I got to meet with God's people? Right? You want that, don't you? Yeah. Some of you. People, I don't understand it, but there's lots of people who love those type of things. But it's like, he just says, don't stop meeting. Make it a regular rhythm of your life. And I'm sure that as you go through life, those rhythms are going to constantly change, aren't they? What does that mean? Other people are considering your life. And you're considering your own life, knowing that who you are as God's people is driving you to meet with God's people, to be devoted to love for your own encouragements. See, some had already abandoned the community, hadn't they? Some had already apostatized and abandoned the gospel. But the Greek word here, to encourage, means this, is that rather than running away, we meet together to cause someone to be encouraged or consoled, and catch this, either by verbal or by nonverbal means. That's what the Greek word means. Come alongside someone and encourage them with words or even without words. How do you encourage someone without words? Say again? Bring them a meal. Yeah. How else do you encourage someone without words? No. No thanks. That's an inside joke. Yes, hug them. Just not me. How else? I think if you've been a Christian a while and you hear this word encourage, it's always like you got to speak, speak, speak. And I want you to say you do have to speak. But what is love? Love is service made tangible, isn't it? When you love someone, you actually serve them. There's an expression. There's something tangible about your service to them that's demonstrating love. And that love, that service made tangible, is encouragement. When you meet with God's people, you're not just there to talk. You're there to show and demonstrate the good news of Jesus. Encouragement in our weaknesses through meeting together is what creates meaningful relationships. Real relationships necessarily involves meeting together to encourage each other, to encourage each other to keep being the church. Biblical community is the only place where loneliness can be remedied. I've been talking with people at soccer, and have opportunities there to talk about Jesus and in church. And one of the conversations I just had recently with one guy was like, listen, I want you to know that the best life you could actually have right now is found in a relationship with other people. But if you don't have Jesus, that relationship is always never going to be what it could be. See, what the gospel actually does is allows you to have real, deep, meaningful relationships where insecurities can be gone, vulnerability can be expressed, love can be shown, forgiveness can be granted. So biblical community, gospel relationships, is the only place where your loneliness is going to be remedied. And this community of God's people provides a sense of connectedness. And as we're going to see next week, this connectedness revolves around not just who we are, but the connectedness is going to, as we see next week, be demonstrated in who Jesus, or in what Jesus has called us to do. So church, we're all lonely because of our sin. And the culture we live in pushes us away from that. Not everything in our culture is evil, by the way. I'm just saying this aspect of our culture is driving us away from deep, meaningful relationships. And if you want deep, meaningful relationships, it'll be something that you devote yourself to. It'll make a regular rhythm to be with God's people, to love them, and to encourage them. And it is there, and only there, that life that God intended will be found. Jesus, thank you for your kindness to die to the point of death on a cross so that we could be restored to God and with each other. And so I pray that you would help us to combat our loneliness by believing the good news of Jesus, by believing that the gospel rightly relates us to you and consequently our brothers and sisters. And I pray that you would continue to help us be more and more vulnerable with each other, that our insecurities would continue to be broken through and broken down, so that we can actually pursue even more these deep, meaningful relationships with each other. We ask these things in the name of Jesus, our King. Amen.